Maybe it's cold outside.
But you know where it isn't cold? Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. Actually, it's hot. Red hot. With formal verification. Hello, everyone. I'm Amelia Dalton, but you probably guessed that already. And this week, my guest is Quentin Osham from AdaCore. And we're talking about formal verification, why we need it now more than ever, and what it buys us that traditional software testing and static analysis does not. Let's go. Hi, Quentin. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello.
Okay, so first off, give my audience a quick update on what AdaCore is all about, and what are you guys up to these days?
Okay, so if you look at our tagline, at least the most recent one, we say we help people build software that matters. So the whole objective of the company is to provide tools that will help people to build more reliable software, more safe or safer software, while keeping costs relatively low, at least not inflating costs. The way we do that is by developing and providing a tool set around the Ada programming language. We provide compilers, of course, provide IDEs, analysis tools, static analysis, dynamic analysis, testing. We serve a lot the world of certification in the avionics industry or military, transportation. So that's one end. We've also started to serve new customers that are coming from markets such as autonomous vehicles or drones and so on and so forth. And those environments that we provide, if you look at the profile of those customers, it's half people that are on the embedded side of the market. So there you will find your ARM targets, you will find your PowerPC targets, running things such as embedded Linux, VxWorks, and the other half are desktop or server-like applications, things such as air traffic management. We have a couple of banking customers. We have a lot of simulation customers, and so on and so forth.
Okay, so we're here to talk about the ins and outs of formal proof. So first off, give my audience some background. Why do you see a need to move toward formal verification? And what does it buy us that traditional software testing or even static analysis does not?
If you look at some of those markets that I mentioned before, you look at medical devices, you look at autonomous vehicles, those people, they have raising safety, reliability, security needs, right? Just take the case of autonomous vehicle. It's quite clear. Today you have more and more electronics on your car. They're not fully autonomous yet, but there are a lot of functionality that the responsibility of the electronics. For example, your braking system or turning the car, you are going to get a lot of software involved in the mix. What if that software doesn't do what it's supposed to be doing? Well, you know, you may have problems that go as bad as killing somebody. Or in the case of cars, if you create an accident on the highway, you may end up killing a lot of people just because of software failure. Now, it was always the case that we are getting more and more software involved in systems, but now it's those kind of systems that traditionally were still sort of on the side, sort of not impacted by that. When you say that a system has to be more and more safe, what do you do to increase the safety? And traditionally, the way people have done that is through testing. So you test the system at various times. In the development process, you may test the system just after the components are being developed, so in isolation of the others. Then you may test things later on integration. When you start to put this component together, then you're going to have fielded experiments, like take a car running on the road, and then eventually you deploy your system, which may still exhibit problems. So all of these testing and verification campaigns are very expensive. But what makes them particularly expensive is not so much the campaigns themselves, is what to do when you find a problem, what to do when you find a bug. Now, the later you find the bug, the more expensive it is going to be to fix. Take two examples. If you find a problem on the developer desk, it's fresh on the developer mind. Nobody relies on that piece of code yet. So, you know, nobody started to use wrong code, to rely on wrong code, maybe to rely on wrong behavior. So it's very inexpensive to fix. You fix it right as it's being introduced. Now, to take the other end of the spectrum, let's think of a problem that is being detected at integration time. That may be detected months and months and months after the developer has introduced it. Maybe that particular developer doesn't work for the project anymore. Maybe he's been fired, or maybe he switched to another project. Maybe other developers started to rely on that failure to work around it or what have you. Fixing that one problem at integration phase is going to be very expensive. It's going to be very difficult to identify, and then it's going to be very difficult to adapt, to bring it back to the original issue, to fix it and to fix everything that it started to rely on. So that's just to give you a sense of what drives cost today in this kind of situation. So what you want to do to reduce the cost is to bring analysis, problem analysis, as early as possible. The Ada language by itself already does some of that. I don't want to go into details on the Ada language too much because that's not the topic here, but just to give you some sense of why the language is out there and why it was designed for, there's a lot of rules that are embedded in the language that will just completely avoid many of the pitfalls that you would see in a C language. For example, having an assignment in an if condition, just to take that one tiny, whiny example, cannot happen in Ada. Now, in C, you would not normally do something like that. You would usually have coding standards that avoid assignment in an if condition, but for that one time in 10,000 lines of code where you write it, and then, you know, that problem finds its way through all the phases, and that's where it gets very expensive. But regardless of that, Ada still is a general purpose programming language. So although it's designed a bit differently, you can still design software and write software the same way. Now, we've discussed testing a lot, something that the industry started to use to bring errors earlier in the process is called static analysis. So the idea behind static analysis is to get sort of a magic wand, if you will, to get a tool that will look at your source code and tell you here, 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 and here, there is likely to be a problem. Compilers have always done that to some extent. You see compiler warning that are going to tell you, hey, look, you never use that variable. Are you sure you're on it? Those kind of things. Static analysis tool, they are going to go beyond that. They are going to try to find more subtle bug that may be depending on the calling context, on the control flow, and so on and so forth. The issue that those tools are facing is that the code they're looking at has not been built for the purpose of being statically analyzable. Okay, so the code is not fit for static analysis, and the tools are made in a way that they will sort of minimize the consequences of this. If you ask a static analysis tool, give me everything that can possibly go wrong, you're going to end up with thousands and thousands and thousands of messages that essentially say, I don't know. So you will configure the tool so that the only information that it provides to you is the relevant one, which is already something, right? It's already good. It's already going to bring some value. It's already going to find some problems early on. But you are still facing a lot of missing things. Now, that brings us to formal analysis. The idea of formal analysis or formal proof is to reverse the problem and to say, let's build a language that is fit for static analysis in the first place. Let's build a toolset that will have the ability to analyze this source code. And instead of looking for bugs, provide me with a guarantee that there is no bugs. And, you know, by no bugs, I mean provide a guarantee that there are none of certain category of bugs. Those bugs that it looks at typically are anything related to overflows, division by zero, those kind of very low-level problems. So now you shifted the emphasis. You have the developer on the desk with the formal analysis tool, and because he's using the tool, when he delivers the software to the next team, there is guarantee from formal analysis that you don't have any buffer overflow, for example, or you don't have any range check error if you look at Ada where you define ranges for variables. So that's already an extremely strong result, and that drives the cost down. You're still going to do testing, you're going to do integration testing because you want to verify that the system is functionally correct. But all of this quote-unquote stupid errors that you may find, you will find them very early on. Now, that's not all. Because you're building your system, because you're building your software on such strong foundations, once you've gone through that first analysis, which is the low-level errors, then you can start to describe functional properties in the code. The Spark language, which, by the way, I should have introduced that earlier, Spark is a subset of the Ada 2012 language. So in the Spark language, those properties are described in the form of a contract, which are essentially Boolean expressions that decorate either a function or a type. So you can say, for example, after the call of this function, this is the state of the system that I'm expecting. Or you could say in the reverse, before the state of this function, that's what I'm expecting. This is the condition under which this function can be called. That specific point is usually what you would normally do through defensive code. With something like Spark, you can, instead of having defensive code, instead of having the callee responsible of dealing with errors, you can tell the caller, do not call me under those conditions, otherwise I'm going to refuse to run the call. Starting to write those contracts here and there is starting to specify the behavior of the application. We went from guaranteeing that there are no certain class of bugs to guaranteeing behavior, and that actually can replace completely certain categories of tests. And again, you do all of this on the developer desk, and once you get the proof, you know 100% that those properties will hold, hence further helping to reduce the cost of the entire process.
All right, Quentin, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, imagine you have one last meal on planet Earth. This is your last food for the rest of your life. What would it be?
I have one last meal. I think I would go for a bœuf bourguignon.
Good choice, Quentin. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
All right, so if you want even more information about formal verification and maybe adopting it in your current existing projects, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page that will take you directly to a brand new book released by AdaCore entitled Implementation Guidance for Adoption of Spark. Now, this book has a set of guidelines for adopting formal verification in existing projects, code bases, and processes. I would highly recommend checking this book out. It is full of really good information. All right, let's talk about RTL. Getting RTL right for your chip design can be a difficult engineering and verification challenge with very high stakes. And for most of us, we use a variety of different tools, including spreadsheets, text documents, the back of napkins, to capture our design intent and a variety of details. In a brand new episode of Chalk Talk called iDesign Spec Executable Register Specification, I sit down with the one and only Anupam Bakshi from Agnesis, and we chat about some really great solutions for getting from design specifications into verified RTL. And you can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by heading on over to the Chalk Talk section of eejournal.com or by heading on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EEJournal. Folks, it is brimming full of all kinds of super neat techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of December 8th, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.